Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events related to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? We're happy that you've chosen to join us. My name is Doris Hansen, and I am the host for the program. And we are here to talk about polygamy. I was born and raised in a polygamy group, taught from the cradle, as most people who are born in polygamy are, that the only way to please God, the only way to get it to eternal glory, is to grow up and become involved in a polygamous situation. We are here for this show to tell otherwise, to prove otherwise. They say it's from God. And in doing the Bible studies and looking at who God is and what He requires for salvation, we know that this isn't true. We are broadcasting live from Salt Lake City, Utah, and this is a telephone call-in program. And we will open up the telephone lines a bit later for you to call in and express your opinions and ask your questions regarding our subject matter. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. And if you would like to contact us, but you don't want to do so on the air, you can call an off-the-air question. If you're in a polygamy group, you can call in with an alias, or you can email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. In any event, we would like to hear from you. If you are a new viewer, you can go to our website, whatloveisthis.tv, and watch any of our previous programs there on streaming video. We do hope that you enjoy watching our program tonight. I'd like to remind those who do attend our discussion group and those who haven't attended yet that we have a monthly discussion group, and the next group is going to be on November 16th. It'll be at 6:30. We invite those who have been in polygamy or are in polygamy to come down and just join and share with us. Or if you have, you don't have to have been in polygamy necessarily. If your life has been touched by polygamy, you're welcome to come. Just email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com for the details and tell us a little bit about yourself, and we would be happy to invite you to come, give you the details of it. Also, for those first-time comers at the discussion group, we do give a free DVD and the free book, Is Polygamy Biblical? For the first time that you come to the discussion group, we're also offering that DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, and the book, Is Polygamy Biblical, free to those who are in a polygamy group, or if you have been, or if you're a member of the LDS Church. We will send it to you for free. Just tell us how to get it to you, and it will be yours. To learn more about our ministry, or if you would like to donate to our ministry, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, shieldandrefuge.org, and you can go there and learn more about us. If you're in a polygamy group and you need help, or you have questions, or if you want to escape, we will help you. That's another purpose that we have for the ministry. We have a contact page on the website. You can go there and get information about us. You can call us on our toll-free number, 877-425-9993, and let's talk. We'd love to help you if we can. Everything will be held in confidentiality. Next week, our guest will be Tracy Ferguson. She's been on the show before, and we are going to discuss the biblical Jesus and compare what the Bible says about Jesus with the Jesus Christ that Joseph Smith introduced and the early Mormon Church taught. The following week, Bill McKeever will be our returning guest. He is very knowledgeable on things Mormonism, early Mormonism, as well as current issues, and that, of course, includes things about polygamy. And we're going to discuss on that show the parallels of the doctrine of polygamy and the blacks of early Mormon, and as it is relative to the Mormon faith. So we've got a couple of good shows coming up in the future, and we invite you to join us. I would like to announce tonight that there is a national conference on cults, sects, and new religions. It's being held at the Calvary Church on November 28th in Charlotte, North Carolina. This conference is focused on fostering spiritual discernment and a defense of the historic Christian faith. You know, Christians do need to be aware of those who are encroaching upon the traditional Christian doctrine and our Bible, and we are commanded to contend for our faith. These types of conferences are always useful and very helpful to equip us to do just that. Our ministry has graciously been invited to present ourselves and our ministry at this conference. We'd like to see some of you there. If you're interested in coming, why don't you just email us, tv@aboutpolygamy.com. You can register on the internet and I can give you the details of how to do that. I would like to quote in part from the book entitled The Story of Polygamy, published in 1886. It was written by a woman from early Mormon polygamy who had experienced the pain and the sadness, the inequities and the abuses of early Mormon polygamy. And in part, I quote, "Since reading some articles on the evil effects of polygamy, I have come to the conclusion that it is my duty to relate my experience on this point and to tell what the dreadful system of polygamy has done for me. It is a very difficult task for a woman to write herself down, either as a fanatic or a fool, and I have been both. Yet still, I appreciate the fact that the horrors of this system can never be fully ventilated or truly told unless we women who have been mixed up with it are willing to help by exposing its inequities to the world." End quote. This is one of the purposes of our programs, Polygamy, What Love Is This? We want to expose the abuses, the inequities, the tragedies, and the many who have been in polygamy, both from early Mormon days up until today, that they have been exposed to and have had to experience. And if you have been touched by polygamy and you have a story to tell, one of the ways to get people moving to understand how dreadful polygamy is to tell your story, and we'd love to hear it. If you want to email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com, we would love to talk to you. Tonight, we have invited Kay Brown, who's been on a very special guest on previous shows. She and I are going to share experiences that we have gleaned from journals and books written by some of the women of early Mormon polygamy. And these stories, we hope, will help to illustrate early Mormon polygamy could not have been from God, that if your ancestors practiced polygamy, they didn't do it because it was a romantic era of early Mormonism, which I have actually heard some people say, and that it was cruel and it was abusive and hateful, and it resulted in emotional, spiritual, and sometimes physical suicide, and sometimes murder. But most important of all, after hearing some of the experiences, we hope that you'll come to know and to understand that a loving God could never, ever, in all eternity, have required this life of polygamy as essential for eternal glory or for any other reason. So we welcome you again tonight. Kay, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, Doris. It's good to be with you again.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And we have a lot of good things to share tonight with our viewers.
Yes, we do.
Would you like to tell our viewers the research you've done, the material you've used to bring out your stories?
Sure. I have read the book Ann Eliza Young, which was published, it was written by Ann Eliza Young, excuse me, published in 1875, entitled Wife Number 19, and the subtitle of it is Or Life in Bondage, A Full Exposé of Mormonism. Her story is not an offshoot from Mormonism. It's actually mainstream Mormonism.
It was at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, absolutely. And she was born at Nauvoo, Illinois, September 1844. Now, Anne's father and mother, as she tells it, and I quote here, were most devout Mormons and were among the very earliest of Joseph Smith's converts. They have indeed been closely identified with the Church of the Latter-day Saints. And that's a name that was an early name for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That name came later. Almost from its establishment, they were connected. They were enthusiastic adherents to Joseph Smith and devoted personal friends of Brigham Young until he, by his own treacherous acts, betrayed friendship and broke every link that had united them to him, unquote. Ann Eliza had firsthand knowledge of the people, places, and events that she shares in her book, and she tells the purpose of her book in her own words, and this again is a quote. It is with a desire to impress upon the world what Mormonism really is, to show the pitiable condition of its women, held in a system of bondage that is more cruel than African slavery ever was, since it claims to hold body and soul alike, to arouse compassion for its children and youth, born and growing up in an atmosphere of social impurity, and above all, to awaken an interest in the hearts of the American people that shall at length deepen into indignation, that I venture to undertake the task of writing the book, unquote.
And she wrote a nice, big, thick book. She's got a lot of her experiences in it. And All of your stories you're going to tell tonight have come from her experiences.
That's right.
Is that right?
In fact, this is an actual 1875 printing of the book. It came from a library. We got it from Amazon. So I do have the original. It is in paperback now that you can buy.
Yeah, it's a good book, and she everything she writes about is firsthand experience, and so we've got some good stories for
her.
I'd like to first begin with a quote that is from a book by D. Michael Quinn, The Mormon Hierarchy, Extensions of Power, and he put a date in that book that I thought would fit right in with tonight's show. On March 11th of 1848, it says, Benjamin Covey is excommunicated, this is in 1848, for having sexual intercourse with two girls less than 12 years of age who are his foster daughters. Now, these are two of his foster daughters living in his home that he took sexual advantage of, and to their credit, the Mormon Church excommunicated him. But he was reestablished in the church a year later, and he served as a bishop for the next several years after that. Now I'd like to look at a similar incident of a more contemporary nature. On September 1st of 1989, Elder George P. Lee was excommunicated for, quote, apostasy and other conduct unbecoming a member of the church, unquote. Now, this occurred after serving as a general authority for 14 years, and 10 of those years were under Spencer W. Kimball. Actually, at that time, the public was unaware of the excommunication that Lee had been molesting a 12-year-old neighbor under the pretension of polygamy. Now, we wonder why the God of early Mormonism demanded the sexual sacrifices of so many young pre-puberty girls. Beginning with Joseph Smith, who took two 14-year-old girls as plural wives, on through Mormon history like Covey and George P. Lee, clear on down to Brian David Mitchell, who was only following in the Mormon prophet leader's footsteps, just as Warren Jeffs and many of the others in the contemporary Mormon polygamous groups do. We also wonder why the God of Mormonism demands virginity and chastity for the females, but he allows and even commands the males to be sexually active with any number of female partners. The Book of Mormon in Jacob chapter 2 verse 28 says, For I, the Lord God, delight in the chastity of women. Doctrine and Covenants 132 verses 61 through 63 explains that if a man wants more than one virgin, that's just fine, even up to 10 virgins. Brigham Young said a man could marry up to 999 wives. But if any of these wives are caught, or if they do any sexual activity with another man, that is evil and they should be destroyed. That's what it says in section 132. Does God really discriminate between males and females this way? Does he really have a double standard which polygamy definitely brings up. So we're going to talk a little bit about these pre-puberty unions that took place in early polygamy. What is...
Well, on the subject of marrying young girls, Eliza's book on page 323, chapter 19, and I quote, "The Reformation times, they used to advise the young girls to choose for their husbands men of experience who would have the power of resurrecting them rather than a young man whose position in the church was not fixed. They carried the practice of this doctrine to the same extreme that they carried everything else. One enthusiastic elder secured for a wife a girl of 11 years, and brides of 13 and 14 were often seen, especially in southern Utah, where the excitement was most intense and rose almost to a frenzy. I, this is Aunt Eliza speaking, was about 12 years of age, and my father had several offers for me from different church dignitaries. But however easily he might be beguiled himself into the snares set by the lecherous leaders of Mormonism and polygamy, he had no idea of making his little girl a victim."
Oh, unquote. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him that he didn't
fall for
that.
It's good when they stand up.
Mm-hmm, when they stand up for it. Maybe that's what gave her the courage later to stand up to Brigham Young.
Yeah, good point.
As one of his wives. And so here there she's telling the story of 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old girls being taken as polygamous wives. And it wasn't isolated incidents.
It was pretty commonplace. And these young women, in some journals that I've read elsewhere, you know, they wanted to stay with their families. And they're taken off
by
a man,
kids.
Very often older men.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Very often they were very older men. Well, I have another story, basically in the same young bride category. And this is from the book Tell It All by Fanny Stenhouse, and it was printed in 1885. And she's another woman. I've quoted her on the show before. She also has written a book, and she also was in polygamy in early Mormon pioneer days. And so her book is also firsthand knowledge. But she says about a friend that she had. She and her friend had come to Utah from England. They had been converted into Mormonism they married their Mormon husbands later. They'd heard there was polygamy, but were told that there wasn't. Rumors wouldn't stop it, and so this friend of Mrs. Stenhouse told her husband-to-be that she would never marry him unless he promised that he would never practice polygamy. And so the man promised her that he wouldn't. They came to America, and then they came on to Utah, and he broke his promise. So this friend is coming and talking to Mrs. Stenhouse about it, and this is what she says. She says, "I entreated him to wait and to put off all thoughts of another marriage for a few months until he had time to consider the matter carefully. He had already thought it over, he said, and could not go back now, for the bishop had chosen a wife for him and had arranged everything. He even told me who it was, a young girl about 14 years of age, a mere child. I begged him, if he would be so wicked as to perjure himself and wrong me, at least not add this to his sin by injuring a poor, innocent child. He was very indignant with me for that. He said that he was doing the child the greatest good he possibly could by marrying her, that he was ensuring her salvation as well as mine, and that he expected to receive the blessing of God." She exclaimed, "Curse is a heavenly word to apply to such a system. Why, there is nothing in hell so hateful, so vile, so detestable." Well, this story ends very sad. The poor woman, it's a long story, I won't go into that. But here again, the arrogance of the Mormon polygamous man, not hurting the 14-year-old girl. He's doing her a favor. Yeah. He's making sure she's going to have salvation.
That just shows the arrogance.
It's awful. It's just awful. God made marriage to be a beautiful thing, and they've just taken it and twisted it and turned it in perversion.
That's why your work is so important, Doris. This is an extremely important work. Things need to change.
Yes, they do. They do. Okay. Well, your next story is, again, it's from wife number 19.
Yes,
right?
It is. Another quote. She says, Orson Hyde is a practical polygamist, as he has a convenient way of utilizing the system. He marries a cook, a laundress, a seamstress, a dairy maid, or any servant he may happen to need. It is so much cheaper to marry domestic than to hire them. Under latter arrangements, he would be compelled to pay them for their services, while by the former, he is only obligated to give them shelter, food, and clothing. His wives represent nearly every nationality, and when visitors come to the house, the first Mrs. Hyde introduces her husband's other wives as Mr. Hyde's German wife, Mr. Hyde's English wife, Mr. Hyde's Danish wife, and so on until all are presented. Very convenient.
Yes, isn't it? So he was too poor or too cheap to hire his labor done, so he just marries the slave labor.
And they worked hard. This book is just full of stories of women who just literally wore themselves out, you know, to try to provide for themselves, because very often they were not provided very well for.
Some of them weren't provided for at all.
At all. And they were on their own.
They were, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes they'd even be forgotten. Mm-hmm. They would put them in some town away from where they lived. And I don't know if I've told the story. I can't remember if I've told the story on the show about Orson Pratt, who starved one of his wives to death. Mm. And if I haven't told the story, I need to tell it. And if I have, I might tell it again. But it's a horrible thing to see that's the way they treat.
Very much neglect. So much neglect.
It was easy to get a wife.
Yeah.
I mean, if they lost one, they could get another one.
Well, and they brought them here on pretenses that there was, you know, it was just a real good religion, and they get here and they find out it's polygamy. Well, they're here in the wilderness where it's not really easy to run, and if you did run, they came after
you. They made it impossible for them to run. They really,
that's
and
right.
You read that in Wife Number 19,
yes,
too. They
several
made it
places.
Impossible for them to run.
That's right.
Okay. The next story I have is from the book, The Women of Mormonism. It's the story of polygamy as told by the victims themselves. And this book has many, many stories from different women that they told the story. And then this woman, Jeannie Anderson Froyseth, published it to a book form in 1886. This book, or this story, says, one day my husband announced to me that he had determined to live his religion and take another wife. I had seen the destruction of the peace of too many homes, not to fear that it might also cast its baleful influence over mine. Yet still I hoped that it might pass me by. She said we had lived happily together for 15 years and had 7 children that were born to them. When he told me of his intention to go into polygamy, he also said that he had been advised by the church authorities to marry a certain woman on purpose to humble me because I was suspected of having more spirit and independence than was befitting a Mormon woman. That tells some story in itself. The decree had gone forth. I wept and I prayed for him not to ruin our happy home. I reminded him of how I had tried to be an exemplary wife and a good mother to our children. It is well that you think of your children, he said, for if you will not do your duty and consent for me to do mine by living up to the privilege of a Latter-day Saint, these children shall have neither food, clothing, nor shelter of any provided for the coming winter. Now, those who read this, perhaps, would think that my husband was a brute. But she says, on the contrary, he had been one of the best of husbands until he considered himself forced to bring me to my senses, as the Mormons would say. None but those who have lived and suffered in it can imagine the tyranny of Mormonism. There is neither law, justice, nor mercy for women in this territory. I was coerced into giving my consent for my husband to enter polygamy, and I will say this much, that Satan himself could not devise any worse tortures than women experience in the infernal system called celestial marriage. She was a heartbroken woman.
Pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
It does. The fact that he threatened the children.
Yeah.
To care for the children. But you know what? So many polygamous men don't take care of their families. Yeah. Even today, this is normal in some polygamy groups.
I found that in my research, too.
Yeah.
Just neglect all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Again, women and children are easy to come by in polygamy groups. So, but, you know, I find this interesting, if you had read in Wife Number 19, that it was the duty for the wife to let her husband practice polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
But when they talked to the man about doing it, it was living up to his privilege.
Yes. I thought that was a very interesting term.
That's a double standard, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yeah.
It's an awful system. I would have to agree for her. It's an awful. And, you know, we've all heard the myth, and I do the myths on the show, the myths of stories about early Mormon polygamy. And one of the myths is that only a small percentage of Mormons practice polygamy.
Yeah.
And only those who were called had a special
another
calling
lie.
To do so. That's another myth. This here, right here, shows that they would go out and they would coerce the men into marrying. The men would converse their husbands to allow him to do so. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't agree, they would do it anyway by threat. Mm-hmm. And some of the stories that we have to say is actually very devastating threats. But the women did their duty by letting their husbands practice polygamy.
True.
Okay, we would like to open up the telephone lines right now. Our number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. We would like to hear your comments. We will listen to other points of view, but remember that we do not take telephone calls where you're screaming or yelling or calling names, or you don't allow a two-way conversation. And right now we have a call coming in from Jack from Tooele. Hello, Jack.
Yes.
Yes, Jack, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, we're doing fine. How are you?
Good, good. I'm Jack. I'm calling from Tooele, Utah. How are you doing this evening?
Yes, we're doing great. How are you doing, Jack?
Good.
Good, good. The question I need to ask you, Doris, is on polygamy, I do know that the man has more than one or two wives, right? Or maybe like three or four wives. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. And during the time of intimacy, when they're ready to, you know, have lovemaking, can the man also have more than one wife the time that they're having sex?
That is not any of my business. What they do in their private life, I have no idea. I don't go in their bedrooms, and I don't want to.
Okay, so what they do is they just only have sex with that one wife one night.
Jack, we're not here to talk about the sexual lives of these personal bedroom scenes. No, we don't talk about that.
You guys don't talk about that?
No, we don't know about it.
Doris, do you think it does happen? Do you think that they have a threesome?
Hmm. We're not going to talk about that, Jack. I'm sorry. That is none of our business. And the whole idea of our show is not to get into the bedrooms of these people, but to get into the Bible with them and show them that this isn't from God, that God does not require it. They don't have to do it. They can live a life of freedom in Christ rather than bondage to polygamy. And that's what we do here. But at any rate, we appreciate some of the calls we get in, and we are opening our phone lines now for you to call in. Okay, Kay, you have a story from Wife Number 19?
I do. This is another quote. In Nauvoo, it had been represented to those who had been told of the new doctrine, speaking of polygamy, that it was optional, that no one need enter the relation unless he chose, and consequently, although they felt it was a cruel doctrine, yet most of the women flattered themselves that their husbands, while they might receive it as a religious truth, would never practice it. But when the church was located in Utah, away from everybody, where help could never reach the oppressed and miserable, and from whence there was no possibility of escape, then polygamy was no longer optional, but every man was compelled to enter it, under pain of Brigham's displeasure and its results. That was a miserable winter for the Mormon women. They felt that they had in some way been the victims of false pretenses, but they did not dare to blame anyone for fear of displeasing the Lord. It was represented to them that this was God's will and they must submit, else they would never see salvation. Many of them were exceedingly rebellious and would have returned to the States had it been possible, but they had no means and no prospect of getting any, and they could only stay on and endure in sullen silence and inward rebellion, which after a while, when they found there was no escape, became a sort of hopeless apathy, which was by no means resignation.
And so this tells part of the story of how they were trapped.
Yeah. Like we were talking about before, you know, trapped in a system where there is no joy, no happiness, basically a lifeless, you know, mm-hmm. it's work, 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 and that was pretty much what there was. I'm sure there were, you know, just to be totally fair, there were probably happy family times with the children around and those kinds of things, but it was very, very difficult. I know she told, you know, the story of her mother and how difficult it was for her mother in polygamy, and had it not been for Ann Eliza, a baby at the time, her mother was considering suicide, and looking into the face of mm-hmm. that little baby, realized, you know, I'm all she has, and you know, it's very heart-wrenching. In mm-hmm. fact, it's hard not to get a little bit depressed after you read these true stories.
Sometimes as I was reading, I'd be reading through it, and I would start to cry, and of course, a lot of it relates to stuff I knew when I was growing up,
yeah.
and I would just put the book down, and I'd cry, and that would make me pray. Lord, let us be effective. Let us be helpful to these women out here who need to
Amen.
to be rescued from this. And something else I would like to mention here too. In these early days, the early Mormon days, the women weren't raised. The first group of polygamists weren't raised in polygamy. Now, I was raised in polygamy. I grew up knowing it. I expected it. It was what the society around me knew, and that's what the way it is with the polygamy groups today. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that strange to them. A girl who's born and raised knowing that she's going to be a polygamous wife, it's not that weird to them. But these women were raised in the normal society where monogamy was the issue, and so it was doubly hurtful to them
yeah.
when very hard for them to understand polygamy and to agree.
A real culture shock,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for sure.
Okay, we have an off-the-air comment. James from Magna dragged his family through polygamy for 15 years and is now Christian. Is that just a comment that... I don't understand. There was no question or anything attached to that. I'm glad he's a Christian.
Yeah.
I hope he has some good Christian support
for sure
around him, and that his family also has come to understand the big, huge difference in the freedom in Christ as opposed to polygamy. And I'd like to hear your story. If you want to email me, tv@aboutpolygamy.com, I would love to hear your story. So you might do that. Another off-the-air comment, Grandma D. from Clinton, how could I get the list of books for historical, truthful information of polygamy? You can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org. We have a list of recommended reading material on that website where some of these books are mentioned. And before the show is over, we will mention how you can get some of the books that we're quoting from tonight as well. Another good place to go for resources is utlm.org. www.utlm.org. There's a lot of good information there. And if you're in the Salt Lake area, you can go down to their bookstore and browse around. Okay, on line two, we have Elaine from Ogden. Hello, Elaine.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air, Elaine.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
God bless you, girls.
Thank you.
I married this person 2 years ago, and...
Elaine, do you need to turn your TV down?
Okay. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Okay, go ahead.
He's raised a Mormon, and he tries to keep trying to get me to go to the church. I've gone to the church, and it didn't make sense to me. They all just talk about Joseph Smith. That's all. It doesn't make sense to me. And so he has abused me, mm-hmm. and he just constantly tells me that the bishop tells him that I have to... He's the head of the household. He's making... And he tells me that it's okay to... That Paul the bishop thinking that he's going to help me. And I tell him everything that he's done to me, and he just tells me to read Joseph Smith. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening. I'm listening.
And it doesn't make sense to me. It sounds like the bishop is on Prozac or Zoloft. And then when they did try to help me one time, or pretend they were going to help me, him and his wife, they both tried to convince me to get on Prozac or Zoloft or some kind of medication. And I said, I don't believe in that. I believe in being active and working out with my dog.
you don't have to put up with abuse of any kind. And whether his bishop says or so, there are many resources out there to get the help that you need. So don't put up with abuse.
Well, a month and 2 weeks ago, he nearly killed me, and he had the bullets in the gun and shot it twice in my head.
Don't stay.
Elaine, if you would like to leave your telephone number with the operator when you hang up, I can call you and talk with you, and perhaps we can find someone close to you who would come and maybe help you, come beside you with this. Because you do
she
need
was
some
exciting.
Help.
I think they have the police. I've called the police, and they've arrested me twice.
Why not him? Why wasn't he arrested?
Because he's a man.
Yeah,
I've got my CNA license, and he tells me that if I call the police again, he laughs in my face and says that they'll arrest me again, and then I'll have charges on me, and then I won't be able to go pursue my career. Either way, I'm a hostage.
If this is what's going on, why don't you call your local television station or write to the newspaper and get some news media involved, and perhaps you can get some help that way. But at any rate, you can leave your telephone number, and we need to get on to some further calls. But if you want to leave your number, I can call you and see what we can do.
Thank you. God bless you, girls.
Okay. Thank you, Elaine. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. On line 3, we have Ben from Salt Lake City. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Doris?
Yes.
I remember in the 1960s and 70s, thereabout, people picketing Temple Square. Most of these people were black. I never got to read their picket signs, as I would usually be just driving by. Do you know what that was all about, and if it ever got resolved? I don't see them there anymore.
No, I don't. You don't know what the picket signs said, and you don't know what the subject matter was?
No, I don't. I think it was something racial.
Well, it could have been the 1978 choice for the Mormon Church to bring the blacks up to equal level of the whites. I don't know. It could very easily have been something else as well. There's people during the conference and other times. People are down there talking to the Mormons. So I really don't know what particular one you're talking about. But it might have been the 1978 black issue.
It might have been.
And we're going to be talking about that in 2 weeks.
Yes.
If you want to tune in then.
Okay, that was my question.
Okay, well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good night. Okay, we have an off-the-air question. Jacob from Salt Lake City, what about Old Testament polygamy? Wasn't it allowed then? We get this question all the time, and naturally, the polygamy in the Old Testament, it's actually something that Joseph Smith used to validate his polygamy. However, if you go back into the Bible and you can read it from cover to cover, you will never find where God told Jacob or Abraham or David or anyone else to practice polygamy. Joseph Smith said he commanded it. He did not. He never did. Just because they practiced it does not mean that it's something God wanted them to do. People have the freedom to sin. And those people were humans just like us, and they were in sin when they practiced polygamy, just like they are in sin today for practicing polygamy. So if you want to go onto the website, childrenrefuge.org, there's an article there about Old Testament polygamy that you can read, or you can email me, tv@aboutpolygamy.com, with your address, and I'll be happy to send you a book called Is Polygamy Biblical? And that will answer some of your questions as well. Okay, we have on line 1, Joseph from Utah. From Utah. Okay. Hello, Joseph.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello. What's your question?
Doris, my question was, you pretty much answered it for me. My question was, I always thought that in the Bible that God did command Isaac and Jacob and Abraham to have multiple wives. But listening to your comments just before you picked up the line, pretty much answered those questions.
Well, Joseph, Joseph Smith said that God told and blessed the patriarchs to practice polygamy. And he mentions Isaac and Moses. Now, he also mentions Jacob and Abraham. We do read where Abraham took Sarah and Hagar, although it wasn't what practical polygamy was all about at all. Isaac did not live polygamy. You can look, you can scrape through that Bible, comb it through it. You'll never find where Isaac practiced polygamy. He didn't. Joseph Smith said he did. So we got him on that one. Jacob did, but Moses didn't either. Now, I know there are some people who would disagree with that, but there is nothing in the Bible that indicates that that Moses was a polygamist. It mentions a different wife at a different time, and we're not even sure, some scholars are not even sure it is a different wife, but perhaps his first wife had passed on by then anyway. So Joseph was wrong on those accounts, at any rate, Joseph Smith was. But anyway, you can try. You can get the book, you can get it off our website, or you can email me with your address and I'll mail it to you and you can read about it.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for your call. Good night. Okay, we have line two, Jim from Sandy. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Doris. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine. You're on the air now.
Okay, I've got a really puzzling question that just came to my mind about the 132nd section of the DMC.
Jim, can you speak up? I can barely hear you.
Sure. How's this?
That's a little better. Thank you.
Okay. About the 132nd section of the DMC.
Yes.
Where it says that if a woman refuses to go along with this, the husband is free from the law of Sarah, and he can just basically do it anyway.
That's right. It's damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Exactly.
Wasn't that convenient?
I was wondering, these women that in the early days...
We lost him. He just went off.
Yeah.
Jim, you can call back. Call back with your comments if you like. I don't know what happened, but we sure did lose you. Yeah, he's talking about the polygamy doctrine and the Doctrine and Covenants that Joseph Smith wrote down. He claimed came from God, and that a woman was supposed to give her okay for the man to marry another wife. But if she refused to, then she was out of order, and he had the right to go ahead and marry anyway. So,
and read the whole section. Don't stop early on, you know, just a little ways through, because the very end is very telling. It's, you know, he really comes down on Emma, and, you know, she will be damned if she does not practice polygamy. And it's just, yeah, very...
Yeah, very telling.
Yeah.
And in fact, he says anyone who reads this and knows of this new and everlasting covenant and doesn't live it mm-hmm. is damned.
Right.
So just reading it will damn you because if you don't live polygamy, according to Joseph Smith. Line three, Valerie from West Valley City. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, is this Doris?
Yes, it is. You're on the air.
Yes. What I wanted to mention and maybe get your input on it, I read a book several years ago when I was born again, because I used to be LDS, and it was written by Brigham Young's niece. And in there I was really, really concerned. A lot of things came up, but the Blood Atonement Act and the Destroying Angels really got to me when a young couple, a teenage couple, a young boy and a girl tried to escape, and she had been promised to one of the Quorum of the Twelve, and they caught him. And she was given over to, you know, the Quorum of the Twelve ultimately. But he was taken by what they call the Destroying Angels, forced to dig his own grave, kneel in front of it as his throat was cut, and fallen back in. And so the Destroying Angels was mentioned in her book many times. So when the All Red thing came up, and there was a murder of a mother and children, and the name came up again of Destroying Angels, are you aware of the Destroying Angels, and do they still exist?
I'm aware of the Destroying Angels of the early Mormon history.
Called the Danites.
But as far as there being any, I've heard rumors of a Mormon mafia and this kind of thing, but I haven't had any definite proof that this is the case, have you?
Annie Liza, she does refer to times when they were quite certain that like one young woman tried to escape, and it was rumored that she was found dead. And so, and there were many instances where when you put all the circumstances together, it was pretty certain that this was blood atonement. And they were slit, you know, across the throat. I mean, it's just a horrible, horrible thing. But the blood atonement is a very real thing. And it is Masonic. It comes from Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that they do. In fact, the very same symbolism, verbiage, you know, the hand movements, you know, the actual ritual that is done in the LDS mainstream temple. Well, was, I should say. It isn't any longer, but was done in the LDS temple. That is blood atonement, and it's Masonic, and that's where that's where I believe it originated from.
Mm-hmm. All indications are that's mm-hmm. the truth, yeah. So, Valerie, as far as the modern Mormon mafia or Danites, let's just say I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't have any proof.
Okay, well, thank you. Oh, and I just wanted to know if you got a chance to read my great-great-grandmother's journal.
I have been reading it. I haven't been able to get to the end of it yet, but I'm finding, just like some of the other journals, where they won't say a lot of negatives, but you can tell by what they're saying how sad their life is, how unfulfilled it is, how empty it is.
I think it was a fear.
Yeah.
I think they were afraid. I think that their journals would have been read by the men.
Big-time fear. Fear of men, and fear that they were going to displease God by not doing what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
And it wasn't even God's command.
Thank you, Doris.
Thank you, Valerie. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Good night. Okay, we have Suzanne calling from Cottonwood. Hello, Suzanne.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
I started to think about the Texas ranch raid that happened about 2 years ago.
Yes.
And they brought some of the women and children out.
Uh-huh.
And I know social services is working with them. What is the current status with that ranch?
Suzanne, there were some charges that were brought to some of the men that were in that community. All of the women and children, or I think most all of the women and children were sent back to the ranch. But there have been criminal charges filed, and the first court case against the first man has been this week. I've been following it every day, and there hasn't been a verdict yet. I think it's going to go to the jury in the next day or two. And then we'll find out. And he's got a second charge, the same person does, and then they'll be going. I think there were 12 indictments from this. So the women and children went back. I hear there's still the abuse going on. They haven't changed. They've just dug in deeper. They've just gone underground a little bit more. But at least to let the world see some of the things that are going on. And we just continue to pray that God will bring out into the open these things that's going on in the polygamy groups.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Suzanne, for calling. Good night. Okay, looks like we have some more calls waiting, but they're not quite ready yet. I guess the misery and the deceit that we read in these stories, and we know is taking place in the polygamy groups of today, the horror things that are going on. And one of the things that the El Dorado that this woman just called on, the court case, in one of the news articles I read, they said, we need a victim. Ooh. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
Because
they wait till there's a victim.
They can't do much if there's not a victim.
Yeah.
And there are victims out there, but they are too frightened to come forward. They have been threatened. They've been coerced. They've been thinking that if I come forward, God will damn me. And
yeah, they have they the religious worry, you know, that they're going to be damned to hell for leaving. So they have that fear. And boy, that is really played up. I mean, it was played up all through this book, you know.
It is.
It's all about salvation. And, you know, so a lot of them went into polygamy because they were afraid they would not have salvation.
That's right.
And so they have that, and you know, and then they have the fear of being chased after if they do leave. And Eliza just escaped, you know. It was amazing how she got away, but she had to deceptively pack her clothes a certain way, you know, get so many out, make it absolutely not look suspicious.
Have someone help her.
And she did have the help.
A house of refuge to go when she got out, too.
That's right.
That's absolutely right. Which I might say right now, if anyone's watching and you're a victim and you haven't come forward, why let this person loose to make other people their victims as well? You can come forward. There is help. There is refuge where you can be safe. So you might want to think about that. Okay, we have an off-the-air question, Jim from Sandy. If Doctrine and Covenants 132 says that men can invoke the law of Sarah, what were women thinking? Didn't they read Doctrine and Covenants 132? Unfortunately, I think it was Mrs. Fanny Stenhouse in the book Tell It All. She did not read Section 132 until many children and wives later. She was in Europe, and the Section 132 first came out. She was told about it. And because she was told about it and didn't think she would be lied to, she didn't bother reading it. And unfortunately, these women or men didn't read their Bibles either, because if they'd read their Bibles and they knew their Bibles, they would know that polygamy never came from God. It couldn't have. Mm-hmm. But many years later, after her husband had already gone into polygamy and she'd gone through the suffering and the pain, she sat down and she read Section 132. And she threw it to the ground, and she knew, after reading it word for word from beginning to end, that nothing like that could ever have come from the mouth of God. And she was set free. So,
and in 1866, the Doctrine and Covenants in Europe did not have Section 132. They didn't know anything about polygamy yet.
She
here,
was there. Yeah, she were, was in yeah. there when Section 132 first came out.
Yeah,
and she was in Europe just yeah. before she came here.
So there was the deceit, because mm-hmm. they were living polygamy here under Brigham Young.
Right.
At the same time, they were deceptively.
They were denying. It.
They were really tricking people to come over here. And it's really sad. I mean, it's almost like demonic forces, seriously, because women would leave their children there.
Mm-hmm. They did.
They left their children, their husband and their children there to come here, and then they get here and, it's a terrible thing.
And then find out they're stuck into polygamy. That's right. Okay, we have Tina from Salt Lake City calling. Hello, Tina.
Hi, how are you, Doris?
Good. You're on the air, Tina.
Oh, thank you. I just noticed that you mentioned Brian David Mitchell at the first of the show, mm-hmm. and I'm embarrassed to say that he's my uncle by marriage.
Okay.
And Wanda Barzee is my aunt, my uh-huh. mother's sister.
Okay.
And they were extreme devout Mormons mm-hmm. prior to his freakish, his own religion that he decided to start on his own, where he would go uptown and preach.
Mm-hmm.
But it pretty much came from the Book of Mormon and everything that he was preaching came from the Book of Mormon, and he just started his own little religion and was preaching to people uptown that they should follow him because he was Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously isn't.
Right.
And it's embarrassing, but it's sick.
But that's what the system brings, isn't it? It breeds this kind of thing.
It does.
And when
they all, I'm sure there's more people than just him that have,
oh yes,
on their own rants and raves and, mm-hmm. and starting their own religions on what Joseph Smith started.
Well, there's over 200 splinter groups from the original LDS Church.
Yeah, it's just sad, and it's sick, and I hope that, they get what they deserve for what they did. And
well, we need to pray for justice, that's true.
And men are victims, totally. Too. We have to remember here that it's not just the women. The men
right.
are duped by a false religion, false prophets, and this was warned about in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible, is our standard, is our gauge. We gauge everything by what is in the Bible. And, it's ignorance. But these men are also victims, and then they create victims.
That's right. Absolutely. On
their
right.
own perversion,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Coming across to, let's do this to get more women. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think this whole thing started from my aunt losing her 14-year-old daughter, deciding to move out from their home because Brian was doing things that he shouldn't be doing with her.
Oh.
And my aunt being so brokenhearted, losing her daughter, well, let's go find another one, mm-hmm. And they found Elizabeth, and that's what happened. And the things they did to her is just horrible.
Yeah.
And if they did that to my daughter, I would want complete justice if I didn't do it myself.
Yes.
So
Well,
I
Tina, we appreciate
just,
your
it's
input.
Sad, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is sad, and if Brian David Mitchell read any of Joseph Smith's history and some like the 34 wives and all that, he mm-hmm. had he followed in his footsteps.
Oh, he definitely did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Tina, thank you for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you take care, you guys.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Good night. Okay, we're running short on time here. We'll take Grant from Sandy. Grant, you're on the air. Are you there?
Yes.
Can you make it quickly? We're getting towards the end here.
Hi, Doris.
Hi.
The first six church presidents, LDS church presidents, taught that polygamy was mandatory to reach the highest
right.
heaven. And they also taught that God and Christ were polygamists.
Right.
Do you know of any modern church president that's repudiated that God and Christ are polygamists? Because Mormons are supposed to be like God, and that's part of the question. The other part that I want to comment on and have you answer is
need to hurry, we're getting close here.
I know. It seems to me that the LDS Church president, President Monson, owes the Mormon people to tell them whether polygamy is merely optional in the next world or mandatory. We know it's going to be in the next world.
We know that's what they say,
yeah,
but
that's what they say because they're doing it in their temples. But mm-hmm. is it mandatory to get to the highest heaven? It seems to me that
Grant,
the Mormon people
Grant,
have a right to know the answer to that question.
I agree with you. I've really got to get close to the end here.
So anyway,
Grant, what I would say very quickly is even if he did come out and say that, the next president would be able to refute it because the living prophet's the only one that counts anyway,
know,
according
to
that.
A lot of people would fall away from the church if they knew that it was mandatory in heaven.
If they knew the truth, none of them would stay.
Well,
if they knew
okay.
the truth of Mormonism.
Okay, we want to thank you, Grant, for your phone call. We have to close the show up, and maybe
you
call next week. Uh-huh, thank you. Good night. Thanks, Kay, for coming.
Thank you so much for having me again.
And we're going to do this again on December 3rd. Kay and I are going to do another show together. We're going to talk about eternal marriage, right with what Grant is talking about. And we're also going to be talking about eternal pregnancies, which is what it would happen. Tonight, we've told a lot of stories. And as we've discussed, not all of the stories of early Mormon polygamy were probably this horrible. And yet, at the same time, we haven't told some of the worst stories either. Mm-hmm. We have searched the Bible, and if these people had looked in the Bible, they would have known God could never have commanded this. We do want to thank you for watching our show tonight. We do hope you'll come next week and share another hour with us on polygamy. What love is this?
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.